Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and Space, Season 2, Episode 6, covering this week's The Snowmen, the Christmas special for Doctor Who 2012. I'm Dolly Domofsky, one of your wonderful hosts. Joining me as in his return appearance is the luscious Steven Strum.
Winter is coming!
The winter is surely coming.
Am I weird for... I'm not the only one who thinks it's super weird that they keep using that line, the winter's coming, in this episode over and over, knowing full goddamn well that that line has been, like, completely co-opted. That line belongs to Game of Thrones, and they just keep using it over and over again.
Well, here's a... You know, before we get into the actual episode of The Snowman, here's an odd... oh, by the way, Sean is not joining us because he's watching foosball. And so, yeah. Poor Sean.
What was it? Did you say he's watching... Fool's ball.
No. Really interestingly though, and we'll get into this at some point in a future episode, I'm sure. But there's a huge Game of Thrones connection this season in that.
Winter is coming. Winter is coming.
That was said a million times. Jenna Louise Coleman, is that her name? Is dating the actor that plays Robb Stark. And is trying desperately to get him to appear in this season at some point.
Wow, really? Okay.
Or in a future Doctor Who, some type of Doctor Who type of thing. And of course, we have the guy that plays Davos in season 2 is in one of the episodes this coming year. So, I think George R. R. Martin wrote an episode. No, I'm just kidding. although that would be fucking amazing. How awesome would that be?
If that ever does happen, and listeners, please tweet at him constantly until it does happen. That is when we do our crossover episode with Cast of Thrones. I think that is the moment.
But so there's a lot of Game of Thrones love in this season of Doctor Who. I think both shows have hit an incredible level of popularity around the world, recently. So I think it's well warranted.
Probably the two, I would say, the two most popular genre type shows out there right now. Not genre, but science fiction fantasy shows, like, in the world right now, I gotta say, probably.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you. And both, obviously, Neil Gaiman writes, he wrote another episode for...
Neil Gaiman. Is that who you meant?
Neil Gaiman. I tried to be a British and call it Gaiman. Neil Gaiman wrote an episode of Doctor Who this year, and he was once...
Is that this year? Was that last year?
Last year and upcoming this year as well.
He wrote another one.
Yes, he did.
Shit, I didn't even know.
And his... he's really well known for his hugely popular graphic novel. Steven, I'm going to leave it for you to name it.
The Sandman. I've got $500 worth of Sandman comics sitting not more than 5 feet away from me. I'm looking at them right now.
Here is another awesome Game of Thrones connection. Neil Gaiman originally pitched The Sandman to George R. R. Martin to be in the, one of the many editorialized collections that George R. R. Martin does through his writings. And George R. R. Martin turned him down. And so he said, well, I'm just going to take it over to DC and Vertigo.
Oh, really? So, yeah, I did not know that.
A little tidbit there, yeah.
Also, I think they tried to make a Sandman TV series on HBO once, which is the broadcast station that plays Game of Thrones now. So,
oh, true. Yeah. And Sandman, they could have, as everybody knows, Sandman turned into Boardwalk Empire.
a lot of correlations there, you know. That episode where... Steve Buscemi goes into the Dreamlands and fights a man with mouths for eyes. That episode was directly taken from Sandman. They will be hearing from Neil Gaiman's lawyers. So.
Wouldn't it be great if the Dream Lord was actually the Sandman?
The Dream Lord is the Sandman.
There you go.
The Dream Lord from
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. Gotcha.
See, because we are a Doctor Who podcast. Man, that would be the ultimate geek fanboy dream, right?
What if the Dream Lord shows up in the Neil Gaiman episode? What would you say then?
Oh my lord! Then That I'm just gonna keep it to myself until that moment happens, because I'll be wiping the screen off my laptop shortly.
Wiping the screen off your laptop, all right?
It's
I hit
just
it so
wiping it
hard, it
completely
just came
off.
swooshing right out of it.
Swooshin', splooshin'. Anyways, again, Stephen, thank you for joining me this wonderful post-Christmas holiday week. It is New Year's Eve tomorrow. The next part of the series comes back in April, so we're going to try to do some
Christ,
good filler
April.
app. Yeah, we'll do some good filler episodes. Do you believe that we're going to have Game of Thrones back to Game of Thrones? Game of Thrones and Doctor Who both come back in April.
Oh, maybe, damn, maybe we should do an crossover episode with
We
Cast of
might need to.
Thrones.
We might need to. A prequel episode for both series. But yeah, so we'll do some good episodes between now and then. But this week, I definitely want to talk about Les Snowmen. Whereas that's the French version of the snowman.
Oh, the
This
snowman. That's what you meant.
the
Okay.
snowman. The snowman.
I don't, as you know, I don't, I do not speak French, so I had no idea what you're talking about.
Snowman. I think it's snowman.
Dave Snowman,
Dave.
it was the villain in this episode this week. He was an accountant from Yorkshire. The doctor had to was audited this week, which is, I thought, an interesting way for the direction for them to take the Christmas special. Dave Snowman, not the most sinister of villains I think they've had on the show, but certainly more memorable ones.
So
Oh, okay.
let's do a quick recap for those people that haven't listened or haven't watched the episode. Yeah, turn us off now and go ahead and watch it and come back to us in 5 seconds. Okay, we're
Well,
back.
that's the episode's longer than 5 seconds.
Well, yeah, that's true, I would say. 5 seconds in our time, which is an hour plus in their time. See, we did some timey-wimey stuff there. Anyways, let's do a quick synopsis of the episode to catch everybody up in case they have watched it and they've forgotten some certain things. It takes place in the 1800s, I think 1842, England. It kind of starts off with a young boy building a snowman in his yard, refuses to play with the other kids because they're making fun of him. And the snowman starts speaking to the boy and says he's going to help him. He doesn't need anybody else besides he himself and the snowman. So to be happy. 50 years later, the boy's in his 60s, I'm assuming.
I
His
suppose, yeah,
doctor.
or at least mid to late 50s, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess that doesn't really matter, though.
true. He did look a little bit older than his 50s, so regardless, the boy's name is Dr. Simeon, and he has created the Great Intelligence Institute. We'll get to that in a second here. He hires men to get all the snow, like this big giant snow globe. He's been sampling snow from around the way, around England, putting in this snow globe, which is kind of creating these animated evil, helping create these animated evil snowmen. The doctor is obviously still at a loss for losing Amy and Rory, and River kind of taking off on him, although she may be back, who knows.
Should
And
be back.
so yeah, he's here in the 1890s, kind of relaxing a bit, and doesn't really he's kind of done with his game, I guess you could say. He's
Yeah,
done being the doctor.
I wouldn't call it relaxing. I would call it like almost like hiding or.
Retire, like faux retirement.
Yeah, he's sort of in a grumpy ass Scrooge-like retirement
Yeah,
kind
you're
of. He
right.
has stopped
Yeah.
helping people across the galaxy and across
He
time and
has been
space,
kind of a
and
Scrooge.
he has
But
given up all that to live in the sky in his TARDIS.
who has been kind of picking up the pace is a team of detectives, a Scooby gang of detectives, I guess you could say. Madame Vastra, the Silurian, her wife, I guess you could call her Jenny, and Strax, the Centauran, all of
Centauran
which
nurse
the
from
Centauran
all these
nurse.
characters are from When a Good Man Goes to War and Demons Run.
Which is still one of my favorite episodes of last season, but it's again Strax kind of steals the show, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Strax is great.
So anyways, they're kind of hopping around London looking for any oddities, any weird things that are taking place. I'm partly reading this from the Wikipedia entry, folks, as well as my recollection. So they come in contact with Dr. Simeon. The doctor comes in contact with a a barmaid named Clara. She kind of accuses him of creating this the evil snowman that she sees. And
I don't know if she accuses him of creating them, but she knows that he knows something.
He knows something
about
him, right?
More than he's letting on.
Exactly. So she follows him to his TARDIS, essentially, which kind of a really bizarre, very almost steampunk style setup for the TARDIS. It reminded me a little bit of the upcoming BioShock Infinite for video games, where for consoles, where the TARDIS in the sky. I guess you could call it TARDIS in the
yeah.
sky with diamonds.
She, I got kind of like a Narnia vibe
yeah,
from it somehow.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Definitely.
I don't even like Narnia books that much, but yeah, the TARDIS is suspended in the clouds on because he has hyper condensed the cloud vapor,
yeah.
And there's a spiral staircase leading from about 10 feet off the ground into the clouds, and it's invisible because presumably because of a chameleon circuit or something, and
yep.
You have to jump up, pull the ladder down, pull yourself up, go up the things to get to the TARDIS, and or go up to the spiral staircase to get to the TARDIS in the clouds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so eventually she kind of sneaks around, discovers that there's more to meet the eye, more than meets the eye with this doctor. Sorry, my coffee is going down a little bit slower than it should be. There's more than meets the eye with this character named the doctor, and goes back to kind of try to figure things out on her own. She's a wily character, this Clara.
She's also the other. She is what is it? Oswin from
Oswin Oswald.
The first episode
yep.
of the season.
Yep, Oswin Oswald.
She's played by the same actress, which
yes.
the doctor does not realize because he never saw her face, obviously.
Yep. And so
but we know. That.
We, but we
dramatic
exactly.
irony,
and so you know, she kind of gets mixed up in this whole snowman story angle as she is the what was it the governess, the new governess for I think it was Captain Latimer. She's the new governess for his children.
If you listeners, if you don't know what a governess is, basically live-in
yeah.
babysitter.
Yeah, it's the Sound of Music / Mary Poppins style character. And that's who she
yeah.
is. She's kind of,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is kind of
that's
an interesting
point.
Take on it. Just realizing the whole Mary Poppins thing. Anyways, so as she's watching out for these kids, the former governess who had fallen into the pond behind the kind of the estate that she's working in has died and she comes back to life, frozen.
Not even frozen. Like she's like made
ice.
Of ice. Her
yeah.
DNA has been fused with ice.
That's true. Yeah, the DNA has been fused with ice. And so, again, in the mix of this whole thing, the Captain Latimer is kind of working with Dr. Simeon in some aspect, and
yeah, they never really do explain
yeah,
kind of the nature of that whole thing, like. She was connected to Simeon somehow. She was like used to be his governess or
mm-hmm.
something like that, and or something. Or he used to come there, or he wanted to buy the house or something. What
something
I don't
like
really
that.
Get,
yeah.
Or maybe I just missed it, but I didn't really understand their relationship, their interaction there.
Yeah, so there was a lot of those kind of story arcs that or those story threads that happened throughout this episode, but we never some things never did quite get explained, but. And so, you know, so there's that whole mix there. She realizes she has to get a hold of the doctor once she's kind of figured out all the kind of the evil goings on between Simeon and Latimer and the former governess, and runs into Vastra and decides that, you know, Vastra says you can only give – this is – I found this really kind of cool. You can only give one-word questions and one-word answers to the questions that I give you and questions you're asking of me. So they kind of go do this back and forth. It was quite witty. And then she says, "All right, well, I guess you've kind of passed the test. What would you like to say to the doctor? And you can only have one word to say it." And so, for the U.S., they had cut to commercial. I don't know if this happened in the British airing. They come back. It's Vastra on the phone with the doctor and his space phone and his brand new TARDIS, by the way, has a brand new TARDIS. And she says, "Yeah, there's a girl here who." Has needs your help, and he says, "Well, did you run her through the test?" She says, "Yeah." He says, "Well, you know what did she have to say? You know what was the word that she said?" And the word was the
pond.
Pond, which made the Doctor freeze. You know,
yeah.
Pretty cool. Because he was very apathetic to everything up until this point. As soon as the word pond was mentioned, he seemed to drop everything and head over to their rescue.
And I think that was actually, I think you might have gotten the order of there a little bit long.
Sure,
or
yeah,
a little
sorry.
Bit wrong. It was, she did the test, and then he came over, I believe.
Yes.
And that's when the ice thing attacked, because he wasn't there in the first place.
Yep, that's true, That's when the ice thing attacked. And then after he, you know, kind of rescues, the ice thing attacks, rescues them all from the ice thing, they go to Dr. Simeon's, the Great Intelligence Institute, and he comes to find out that the giant snow globe contains something called the Great Intelligence, which is an entity that's been that was the entity that's been speaking to Dr. Simeon since he was a kid.
Played by Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen. I thought that was a fantastic fantastic inclusion, which I knew you know the voice right away once you hear it. I mean, he's.
I thought it was
iconic.
Honestly, I thought it was kind of a bit of a bummer that he was just in a voice role, that he was not a like an on-screen character at any point.
Well, there may be – well, the Great Intelligence was in previous Doctor Who episodes in I think the episodes that were done in the 60s and stuff, 60s and 70s. Maybe there were some in the 80s. But this is the first time that the Great Intelligence has come back in some respect to modern Doctor Who stuff, Doctor Who lore. So
the Great Intelligence was the – what weird Lovecraftian thing, because it literally called itself Yogg-Sothoth or something. Somebody called it Yogg-Sothoth back in the old days. All right, yeah.
Yep. And it was set up in it was in The Abominable Snowmen, which was set in the 30s, and that was the second Doctor. And The Web of Fear, which was set in the 60s. Here's just a quick tidbit about the Great Intelligence from Wikipedia. In these stories, the Great Intelligence uses a robot Yeti as its physical presence. I totally remember that Yeti too. I've seen so many pictures of that. And even in the Web of Fear episode, some of those events are alluded to by the Doctor in the Snowmen, which is kind of interesting because the Snowmen takes place in 1892. The Web of Fear takes place in 1960s. So there's definitely some stuff taking place here and there. In the Doctor Who verse, which is tying in some of these older things. Anyway, so just as Dr. Simeon, I guess, has the Doctor Who at an impasse and is about to kill him, especially, right? I think they'd gotten into some type of battle, the Great Intelligence, his effect or his control on Dr. Simeon somewhat falters, and they're able to break free and then break the globe that the Great Intelligence carried in. And in the whole kind of kerfuffle, Clara gets attacked, and she ends up dying at the end of the episode. That kind of launches into the last scene where the Doctor... I think at some point the Doctor calls her impossible.
But he realizes that she is the character from the episode with the Daleks.
Yes.
I forget the name of the episode, the first episode of this season. He realizes that she's the same Oswin character and goes off searching through time for her again or like another version of her or something, which we see at the very end. She sees, as we see Oswin or Clara or whatever you want to call her, looking at the grave of the 18th century version of herself. So there are at least three versions of the same person running around, because she says the exact same line to the Doctor as she's about to die, because the Doctor revives her for a small bit of time. She says the exact same line that she says to him is the last thing that she says to him in the Dalek episode, and then which is "Run, you clever boy," and that's when he figures it out.
Yep. He had gone to her funeral. And that's where he read her name as Clara Oswin Oswald. It was written on her tombstone, and he realized it's the same woman. Exactly. He hops, runs back into his TARDIS, and he kind of echoes her words at the very end and says, "Watch me run." And so, that closes the episode, and kind of sets up the whole second half of the season. In next week's or our next Lonely TARDIS episode, we'll get into what that second half of the season could potentially be, but. Let's get into kind of overall thoughts about this episode and some things you and I liked and did not like. I mean, we talked a little bit about the stuff before we started recording, but I think we both kind of liked it.
Yeah, I liked it a whole lot.
Yeah, what especially made you like it a whole lot? Because I have some reservations.
I think it's the best of the Christmas specials, at the very least. I mean, in as far as like overall Doctor Who episodes go, I don't think it's like amazing or anything. I think if I'm putting it against some from the very same season, I would probably put it on the same level as the Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, where it is a sort of darker episode with some lighter themes within it, yeah, and stuff like that. I thought. One thing I really liked about it, first and foremost, was that it feels like Stephen Moffat and just the entire crew have become way, 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 way more comfortable with the universe, and I think it really shines through here that they can just tell a story like with characters like Vastra and Jenny and Strax just hanging around, like these recurring characters showing up again, hinting at this greater universe, and everything's not just a bottle episode. You know, you don't just see one character and then never see them again, like the Doctor's daughter, also named Jenny. Like back in the Russell T. Davies days, you would have huge, incredibly important stuff like that happen, and then you would never see anything of it ever again. And in this one, I feel like they've fallen into, like, they've built themselves like a little community, a little world within the world that is Doctor Who, and they all feel more comfortable with it and comfortable enough to tell stories with these people as if they were almost like friends of the Doctor, just kind of hanging out throughout time and space and all this stuff. And I think it's especially great because they picked such great characters to exemplify that, with Vastra, Jenny, and Strax. Strax being the Santara nurse, and Vastra and Jenny being the 1800s detectives, or like science fiction detectives. Mm-hmm. And it's they're just so great. Somebody it was going around on Twitter on Christmas, people talking about how Doctor Who does a ton of fucking spinoffs. They have the Sarah Jane Adventures, they have Torchwood, they have K-9, they have all that stuff. But if they wanted to do a really good spinoff, a great spinoff would be the continuing adventures of Vastra and Jenny in 1800s, tracking down, doing mystery or solving mysteries and solving crimes and things like that, and with Strax as their like sort of manservant. So you get some Downton Abbey style shit, but also Strax being the weird sort of Santara and commando that he is, you know, constantly with the violence and whatnot. They're just great characters. They play off of each other super well. They're really fun to watch. But then at the same time, it's a lot darker than most of the Christmas specials have gone before, with obviously Oswin dying and there. And the sort of primary plot point, the episode is centered around the idea of a frozen woman in the lake near some children, or in this little pond next to some children. It's sort of subtly dark. They don't really dwell on it, which I think is something that Doctor Who does really well. The only thing though is that the villains were not up to par, especially with Stephen Moffat villains. The Great Intelligence was a good callback, I think, but the sentient snow soldiers didn't really do anything for me, mostly because we never they're just there. Right. They're just kind of the little goofy things, you know.
Just to kind of get back to your comment a little bit about Vastra and Jenny and Strax and stuff. what did the Doctor call him? His potato pal or something? Like his potato. He's basically Mr. Potato Head. At some point, he's kind of devoid of much emotion, and he's almost like a robot, essentially, right? He just constantly focuses on one resolution, everything, which is some type of violent outcome for.
Oh, I think he has plenty of emotion. It's just all one emotion.
Yeah, it's just all one emotion.
The eagerness to kill things, because
I think one of my favorites. One of my favorite quotes from about Strax is he says something like, "Let's interrogate him. We'll melt his brain first. We'll pour acid on his brain, and then we'll interrogate him." But I did love the short. I think it was like half a minute, maybe a minute's worth of play and counterplay with the the mind worm or whatever that was called, the slug that would suck
I think they
away
just called it
memories.
the worm.
Was
Yeah,
it the
if it
worm?
touches you, you lose like the last hour of your memories, but if it bites you, you lose decades.
Yeah, and so it was really funny how the Strax kept getting in contact with this thing. He was supposed to capture it so that the doctor could wipe Clara's mind of her ever meeting him. And Strax kept touching this thing, and every time the doctor would say, "Strax, do you have the worm?" "What worm?" "The worm that I just sent you to get." "What worm is that?" Or, "What was I supposed to do?" See, for like maybe like a minute long or 30-second, a minute long scene, which I thought was really well done. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you with the fact that that would be a great like show down the line with great spin-off idea. But I'm really hopeful that they come back through subsequent episodes this season. I think they're all three of those are actually really good characters. I didn't like Vastra at first when I saw her in the last season, but since then I think she's become a really good, really good character throughout the series. So definitely excited to see more of her. I also felt that they come off a little bit like the Children of Time. Remember the Children of Time with Rose and
Yeah, I know what you mean. When Davros said that all he did to all his companions was turn them into murderers,
Yeah,
basically.
exactly. So all these kind of come off like the Children of Time, and I do like that they're almost like a team of detectives. But I go ahead.
The thing I like, I want to just throw in something there is I think part of what I like about Vastra and Jenny and Strax is that they don't quite come off as the Children of Time as much as, like
True,
Jack and
right.
Rose and all of them. Because I think that what I was kind of driving at with this whole greater universe thing is that like these characters existed and had these personalities and stuff before the Doctor ever showed up. They're just sort of in. They're sort of the Doctor just sort of bumps around into them every once in a while. They're not like they don't worship the Doctor's the ground the Doctor walks on like Amy did or something like that.
Sure.
It is it, I, that's part of what I like about them more is they're not like beneath the Doctor. They're more like parallel to him
Sure,
in
sure.
within the or not, they're not in his shadow. They're to his side and everything.
Yeah.
Like they're the they kind of imply that the universe goes on even when the Doctor's not in the room, which is something I really, really enjoyed.
And that was a whole huge part of the first five episodes of the year of the season, which the Doctor unknowingly kind of throws himself into situations, and he's caused the death of his companions, and if maybe had he stayed away, some of these people would still be alive. But yeah, I think that was one of the strong themes of that first half of the season, which was there's still stuff that goes on outside of the Doctor being there. And yeah, I think that's kind of a good allusion to that note. But I enjoyed them as kind of the companions for this episode, and I'm really hopeful they come back throughout the season and maybe down the line. But they would be a great could be a fun spin-off show, maybe for one season, but you never know.
Yeah, and it's another thing that we keep coming back to all the time. We came to it a lot with Dinosaurs on a Spaceship last see of our season, I guess, of what of Lonely TARDIS here, which is that we talked about that we would love to see them start to reuse villains and stuff like that, like create like a not that not necessarily a universe-ending threat, but every single time, but like just recurring characters that can be bad guys that the Doctor can bump into every once in a while that don't just it's not like they come into contact with the Doctor and then they're just immediately erased from existence or something like that. It's they there is a universe that they belong in and they don't just get vaporized immediately. And I think they're finally finding their footing with that concept with the companion style characters, and I think that would be great if they started doing that with more of the villains as well. But and not just the and they kind of do with the Daleks and the Cybermen and everything. But there's no face to those guys. Those guys are forces of nature. Like the Daleks and the Angels and the Cybermen. They are just they're an army of at the gates or something. They're the barbarians. What I want to see is I want to see more faces and more personalities keep cropping up every once in a while,
So what
like
did you th
see like we saw the blue man, I forget his name, but from Demon's Run as well, and his head in the box and everything like that. Seeing those guys pop up every once in a while is great, but I want to see more villains and stuff show up again too.
Yeah,
I would still
definitely.
love to see the Tantrum bots somehow make a reappearance and stuff like that.
I think, speaking of villains, so they mentioned the Great Intelligence, and I think even the Doctor at some point goes, where have I heard that before? And we mentioned it briefly in the summary, but just as an actual backstory of the Great Intelligence, what the Great Intelligence actually is, what was the name of it? Yogg-Sothoth. Okay, so basically the Great Intelligence is Yogg-Sothoth is a race of beings known as the Great Old Ones, who are kind of the equivalent to the Time Lords, but they were in the universe previous to this universe. So, so in their realm, they were essentially what the Time Lords were like. This specific one lost its physical form and kind of became
it's a spirit, almost like a
spirit
science
entity. Yeah,
spirit. So, you know, it's an ethereal being of some kind, and how it is getting along, or how it is managing to keep tuddling on, is that it has taken the form of like crystals or whatever, mm-hmm. that, or something like that, and then it mixes its crystals into the snow and creates like a psychic field around mm-hmm. with the snow crystals and everything like that. But as the Doctor points out, that can only work for so long because eventually snow melts. So he had to find a way to make snow that didn't melt or ice that didn't melt. So he fused human DNA with like a crystalline structure, and he was going to try and create an army of living ice or living crystals that that he could survive within and use to kind of take over the planet and or at least survive on the planet.
I think I enjoyed the episode. Maybe not quite as much as you did. I liked that it was a setup episode. It was almost like I don't want to say a pilot, but like the kickoff to a whole new season with new enemies and new story arcs, but stuff that carries over from previous seasons.
And it feels like that, doesn't it? Because of the giant fucking gap between season one or the middle of the season and next season. It might as well be a whole new season.
I think it was good for them to do that, because in previous years the Christmas episode was its own standalone. You can actually go back right now and watch. I think the majority of the Christmas episodes, even in the Davies and Moffat years, they're just standalone episodes, a standalone story. This season especially, I think, though, it ties in. It's the kickoff to the next half of the season. And it was done really well as that. So I think as a singular story, I didn't quite enjoy it as much. But I think for what it means for the rest of the season, the things that I'm hopeful for, I think it was great. And I guess for me, the big positive for this was, and you brought up the idea that, yeah, it's great that it's kind of mixing into the rest of the Moffat Doctor Who universe. I like the fact that it's pulling in things from previous generations of Doctor Who. The Great Intelligence, this idea of living snowmen, the TARDIS, which this redesigned TARDIS is much more mechanical, very similar to, or I should say, very different from the last few Doctors number 9 and 10, and
right. The last one, I mean, the Tennant/Eccleston's was very organic. It looked like it was maybe grown out of coral.
Yeah.
It looked like something you would see at the bottom of the sea. The second one looked like it was thrown together from bits and bobs all over, from a house. You know, it looked like built out of mason jars.
This one is very wacky and kind of crazy,
thrown together kind of look to it. And this one looks like this looks like something that like a stellar cartography room on the Starship Enterprise, or like a Borg cube or something like that. It's sleek and black and blue and with hard edges and corners, and looks like I think that's meant to I've almost got like a theory, and I'm sure I'm not the first one to throw this out there, but that the TARDIS I'm sure reflects the sort of mood that the Doctor is in when it is recreated on the inside. And I think this stark, hard-edged, dark kind of TARDIS is reflective of how he feels after losing Amy and Rory. He had no he's less madcap and fun. The sort of anger within him, or not even the anger, but the just like loneliness within him is much more apparent now.
Somewhat agree to that, or I definitely agree to that idea. I just think of it, I take it a little bit different angle. So I kind of think of the TARDIS as a metaphor for the Doctor, right? On the exterior, the TARDIS is this really familiar object. At least it was back when it was first created. It was a police box, so it was comforting. It was safe. The Doctor is a human. That's why he's, or he's human-like, human form. That's why he's able to be. Humans are comfortable around him. On the
Right,
inside.
and even if you look at the first Doctor, he was
Yeah,
grandfatherly.
exactly. Yep.
He was somebody you would want to be, you
Warm
would
and
feel
comforting.
comfortable around and stuff like that. He
And
was
I
an old,
think,
this doddering old man who was, super, and he was nice and sweet and lovely to be around and just kind of a warm human being. Yeah.
yeah, and I think the this TARDIS especially, the inside, obviously the inside is bigger than the outside. The Doctor is bigger than being just a human, but this one especially is the, I don't think it's cold for the fact that the Doctor is feeling cold. I think, or what you were saying, I think that it's kind of mechanical inside because the Doctor is done with, or at least in his mind, he's done with making the TARDIS a long-term comfort thing. He the whole idea of his companions constantly dying or leaving him in some way, made him upset. And so instead of allowing them to be comfortable in this house-like ship, he purposely made it, like you said, like a cartographer's room or the navigation room of a ship, of a cruise liner, so that it is kind of colder on purpose, so that people don't get too comfortable. His companions, whoever they are, don't get too comfortable. But in this case, he almost became way too comfortable with his current companion, with his new companion Clara, the impossible girl. And I think she's gonna tie into the great intelligence somehow at some point. But Clara, or Oswin Oswald, as we knew her from the previous episode, Asylum of the Daleks, and from the Tombstone this episode, there's something special about her, and something incredibly, I guess you could say, magical, because both times the Doctor ran into her, she died. The first time she was actually a Dalek. Her mind had been transplanted into a Dalek. Again, the whole idea of looking for, like the great intelligence, which was just this spiritual being that was looking for a body. In previous Doctor Who's, coming back in this episode as a being looking for, a snow-like snowman body, but or human body. And Oz or Clara is somewhat of the same way. And she's had the same physical form. At least in her mind, she's just this fairly attractive young lady. In the first episode, she was a Dalek. She was controlling the Dalek from her from the comforts of her couch. In this episode, she was a barmaid. And actually, it was I did find it really interesting how when the Doctor finally made that connection about was it the custard pie and
Soufflé.
the I'm sorry the souffle and yeah so. I thought those were actually it was a really great callback to that the Silent Daleks this season. But again, she dies and says the same kind of lines, the same lines she said the first time they had met, and that spurred the whole conversation. And now he's going to be looking for her the rest of the season and trying to find out what her story is. But he became so enraptured in her. One of their very first interactions was them kissing, which I thought was very undoctor-like. It's almost like he completely fell for her. Her independence. She kind of reminds me a little bit of a cross between Martha and Donna, but definitely much more wily. And there's definitely a side to her which the Doctor looks at as being almost greater than him in terms of, or at least on par with him in terms of being someone who's very curious as to the machinations of the universe. So he's definitely excited. He's got a boner for Clara. I mean, you
That's a little bit direct, but yeah, I get, yeah,
could.
he
That's what,
definitely, yeah, he
yeah.
likes her. It definitely seems, which I actually kind of thought was a little bit weird. Like I tweeted
I
immediately on
saw
the
that. I saw that tweet.
after that scene happens, like, Doctor, you're a married man. Like he's got his own, he's already he has taken and stuff like that. So I'm not totally as sort of cool as I am as I have been in the past with the weird sort of half romantic relationships he has with his companions. that he has had pretty much, or, you know, it doesn't all have with all of them. But there are, yeah, but he has definitely had him with, a couple, even with Amy, he never viewed Amy in that way. He almost viewed Amy like a sort of a niece or something like that. But
which I felt was a sister, in
retrospect, I think was a pretty cool callback to like the original Doctor Who and, original William Hartnell. But, Rose, and then there was the moments with Amy, and then there was obviously Martha was in, into him and everything like that. But now he's literally married to River Song, and River Song, that is the relationship. That is that is those two characters. He has made his choice or whatever. Like, it was kind of in a kind of weird way or something, it was kind of under duress, but it was still like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear you. There's some really good, play between the two. And I think the episode starts off with the Doctor being Sherlock Holmes, playing the part of Sherlock Holmes, which I thought was really great because
a great moment. That was fantastic.
There's the whole, there was some fan, desire for a Sherlock Holmes, Doctor Who crossover, I think, recently. So a lot of people were crying out for Davies and Moffat to get back together. But this probably put that to rest, I'd say. But the idea that he was Sherlock Holmes, yet he couldn't do any deduction by himself. The rest of his team was supporting his, the cases being solved. They were kind of lying in the shadows behind him. But I think having Clara now be this person who figures things out on her own, even though she didn't quite figure it out until the very end of this Island of the Daleks that she was a Dalek, but I think
the Doctor figured it out for her, and he kind of nudged her in that direction.
She didn't figure it out until the very end. I think it shows this promise in this character, and we see it at that last scene where she's kind of looking at her former gravestone, she's kind of got it solved. She knows something special is going on here, and so.
I think you're overreaching with that. My guess is that when we finally catch up with modern day Clara or Oswin or whatever, my guess is that what we're going to find out is that she thinks that, or that was her great great grand aunt or something like that, and she was named after her, great 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 grand aunt or whatever, and that's going to be what we find out there. But or at least that's what that is her. What do you call it? Her plausible explanation for it, or the plausible explanation for it in time, or something along those lines. I don't think she has figured out that there's something weird about her, thing like that yet. But I think when the Doctor shows up, I think that's when you'll start seeing that.
It's going to be interesting to see what transpires there. I really enjoyed her as a kind of the companion for this one, apart from the Scooby crew. I'm excited. I think it's going to be. The rest of the season looks really promising. Some of the things they showed, we'll talk about it next time. But
before we get into ratings,
for sure, right.
Quick question for you. Mm-hmm. Some people are. I saw someone on Twitter. I think it was maybe Corey Roland said that his prediction for the new season was that every episode, the Doctor was going to run into another version of Clara, and at the end of the episode, she was going to die and die over and over again until the Doctor finally figured out the big secret. What do you think of that?
No, I think that's, oh my God, they killed Clara, you bastards. I think that's going to be some type of recurring theme. Both of these episodes, she's somehow sacrificed herself to, for the good of, saving mankind or saving the situation, right? So I definitely think that's plausible, and I actually like that idea because I guess you could say I'm only worried that it becomes too much of a trope at some point midway through the second half of the season where, Doctor shows up and he kind of lets her die to kind of get the storyline resolved.
First off, I don't think that's going to happen. But second off, if it did happen, my guess would be that you would see the Doctor constantly trying to save her, and then the inevitable ending would be that she kept dying. But I think from the preview that we saw a lot of footage of her wearing that one kind of outfit and not really wearing anything else, my guess is that she is that this new third one is going to be the one.
I'm excited. I think It could have been a cool idea. Maybe it's good in just these kind of first two episodes of the character, as the setup. You know, I think that could be cool.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of room for that idea to work, but
Yep.
I also don't think that that's actually going to be what happened. But I think it would be a very interesting way to take that character and make her into a very weird and odd and tragic character in it. I think it's something that it feels very Doctor Who like. It. So there's something like quintessentially Doctor Who about the idea of a character
And
who dies again and again and again, like we saw with
here's
Rory, the guy, the man who dies again and again, and you know everything like that. But I don't think that's what we're going to see. I just thought it was an interesting theory, and I thought I'd put it towards you.
Well, I one thing that I definitely think that is a really strong could be a really strong theme, and maybe this is again me looking at some of the conspiracy theories out there. The end of last season, or season six, I guess, ended with what's the big question? Doctor Who, right? So that's what we thought this season was going to be all about, Doctor Who. Well, it hasn't quite panned out yet, but potentially, him trying to figure out Clara Who could be the
Yeah,
maybe that's where
no, I don't
this
think
is
that's what,
going.
I don't think that's where
Well, I mean, you know,
it
in the end, I think
necessarily leads. I think he's going to try and figure out what the hell is going on with her,
yeah,
obviously.
he's
Yeah.
gonna try to figure out, but I think that he's gonna see some of him in her, and I think that's kind of
Sure.
what I'm alluding, what I'm leaning towards is that he's gonna discover more of what made him a great person, what made him great as the doctor, as a savior of humanity, or a protector of humanity, by seeing the things that she does in her life, you know. So I think
Although
that
they do reference the Doctor Who kind of thing at a certain
yeah, almost
point,
too much.
they do.
Yeah, they
The
mentioned
midway through
it.
the
Yeah.
episode, when Clara shows up, he says like, "No, she never." They're like, "You're just worried she's going to say those two words or whatever." It's like, "No, she never said it, so it's all fine." And she doesn't even know I'm the Doctor. And then she pops her head down. And is like, "Doctor Who?" And I'm thinking that maybe the revelation is, or that maybe something even the Doctor has already even figured out is that the real big secret behind the words of Doctor Who is that curiosity, and maybe this is why he was in kind of hiding like he
Yes.
was. Maybe the curiosity about him is the thing that Dan, like the fact that he is interesting, is what damns all of these people around him to die or to, to beat their horrible fates that they almost all inevitably meet.
And maybe that's
That
why
Doctor
he's.
Who and the reason that is such a great and terrible phrase is that it is the thing that leads to like death and destruction everywhere he goes, and him being it's like that it's in his very nature to bring about destruction all around him
No,
just
you know
by
what?
being who he is.
I think you're exactly right with what you're thinking. And I think that you know, I think Clara's the same way. He's so curious as to her story now that he's actually doing the chasing. He's actually doing the discovering, 'cause
Oh, that's a good, yeah, that's a good
you know,
thought.
and so that's, I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking is that he looks at her and he said the phrase, she's impossible. Right, he up until this point, he has been the impossible one. He's been the one that's been out of reach. That's what's been causing all these people around him to be drawn to him. And now he's so excited that he's no longer the impossible one. Somebody else defies existence. Somebody else defies belief.
He has gone into Sherlock mode now. He like
exactly.
it's I, maybe that's even a
It's
little bit
almost
of
like
foreshadowing. The yeah, now that you point that out, that's actually a great point. Yeah, he is the mystery isn't him anymore. The mystery is a human being, and it's his turn to get to like try and puzzle it out and solve it. I like that.
I think that could be, maybe that's what ties the Doctor Who as the question in Clara Who as kind of the second half of the season. I think that starts to actually knit some things together really well. He's really sad that Amy and Rory basically figured out Doctor Who at the very end of last season and said, we don't need you anymore, and that kind of sent them into a whirlwind, into a spiral of their life kind of falling apart. And now,
They decided they needed him or that they wanted to be with him, but it was just that when push came to shove, worse came to worse, Amy decided that Rory was more important to her or that than he was. You know, they were more important to each other than the Doctor was important to them. I think, exactly.
And that question wasn't as important to them anymore as it would be to other companions. I mean, obviously Rose, Martha, Donna, the question of the Doctor was very important to them. And so this one I think was definitely something that was. Let's kind of finish up the episode here with some ratings. Well, before we do that, we do have some. Let's go over some thoughts from a few folks that we've talked to on the Twitters and on through emails and stuff. We did have a note from Sean. Sean did want to chime in, even though he's not able to be here. Sean said that he loved the chemistry with Jenna and Matt, and they actually do, you know, outside of the recording in interviews they've been together, they've actually had some fantastic chemistry. So he likes the new twist on their companion relationship and how there's this big mystery with Clara. He loved the Christmas companions. I think all of us love that. Love those companions.
Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. Science fiction Sherlock Holmes meets Downton Abbey.
Yep.
I'd be sold.
Yeah. He says he especially loves Strax. Stole a lot of that episode. And totally agree. Strax was a fantastic Jar Jar Binks for that episode, and I think
there's no such thing as fantastic Jar Jar Binks. Get out of here. Give me this podcast. This is mine now. You've just disqualified yourself.
I appreciate the fact that the Doctor went on without his Doctor crew behind him. So, and he says, the villain was kind of meh. But I think, and I kind of agree, I think it goes around with the story. The singular episodic story wasn't all that super interesting. I think everything beyond that, I think, is what made the episode great. And he says he's curious if the Great Intelligence is going to be returning. Could be a huge, big kind of bad guy. It's a nice throwback to the old Who, which I definitely agree with. He thinks Moffat finally made that dark fairy tale. So I think
just one thing to say about the villain that I don't think we've touched on yet, and just that'll be my last thing about it, is just that I think that the villain is meant more as a symbol than as to be the focus of things here. The villain is an ice monster. It is a cold being, you know, where the Doctor has gotten cold, and I think it's meant to be like a reflection of the Doctor, a kind of a reflection of where he's at in his life and everything like that, and to see that happening and to see this character, he kind of faces off against another version of Dr. Simeon, or that was his name. Kind of is a sort of a dark reflection of what the Doctor was like after, like, in a post Amy and Rory world. Because they were mostly like, you know, he was like, oh, they're silly. He doesn't, you know, that was Dr. Simeon. Oh, they're silly. I don't want to deal with them. They're not, I'm serious and self-serious, and I don't want to worry about those people. And the Doctor is kind of in that same place. So I think that was kind of like, more and more, I think villains in Doctor Who kind of get used more as just plot, as excuses to push character development forward rather than as actual plots themselves, which I think that's not an excuse. I think you should be able to do both. If you're, you know, we should hold them accountable to try and do both. But I think it kind of explains a little bit of why that these villains aren't super super great. But I will say that I think it's a huge waste of Ian McKellen to have a speaking role of a one-off character. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I'm hopeful that the Great Intelligence does make a comeback at some point, and maybe this Great Intelligence Agency or Institute makes a comeback. Seemed like there was a lot of hoopla built around the Great Intelligence Institute. Well beyond what they normally do for these types of episodes. There's a lot of backstory for it. So I guess we'll see. We'll see down the line. Angela Shetler, A. Shetler on Twitter, mentions, not sure what to think of the multiple deaths angle yet, but I like Clara Oswin. So she definitely likes Clara Oswin. I think all of us kind of in agreement there. Storyline itself was meh, but the supporting characters made it a fun episode. She really likes seeing Strax, Vastra, and Jenny again. JD, also known as Mystic Fail on the Twitter, says, I thought it was great. I love Oswin. I like saying that better than Clara. A lot of humor and a good throwback villain. A lot of people were picking up on the Great Intelligence, which I didn't until I watched the episode a second time a couple days later. And that's when I noticed the doctor at some point saying, "Oh, the great intelligence, wherever heard that before?" And that's when I hop onto Twitter and or hop onto Wikipedia to follow up and figure out what that was. So really cool to see people picking up on the great intelligence as a throwback villain. So props to the folks who are definitely much more well-versed in Doctor Who lore than I am. Keith Dotson says, "I loved it. It made me excited for the new season. I've already fallen in love with the new companion." I think it's difficult to not like Clara Oswald, whatever you want to call her, as a companion. She's really fresh compared to Amy and Rory, you know, and the previous, you know, the Tennant and the Eccleston companion. So I'm pretty excited to see that this character already has an incredible background story. So, and then Phil Nolan brings up a good point. He says, "I thought it was odd that the Doctor, this particular Doctor, Matt Smith, has given up at least twice now, only to come back into the Doctor fold." And we noticed that was it last year or definitely a previous season of Matt Smith's Doctor that he kind of gives up completely, only to be pulled back in. And he was in the past; he was pulled back in by Amy and Rory. This time he was pulled back by this new companion, Clara. So maybe this is the time that it actually sticks with the Doctor, that he's you know, back to being the Doctor. So I guess we'll see what happens the rest of the season. I mean, do you kind of agree with everybody here that they all like Clara or Oswin? They love seeing the companions the supporting cast. The story, the actual kind of overall plot, how it unfolded was meh.
I don't know. I agree with almost all of it. Just honestly, I'm not too hot on Clara yet. Think that
wow.
get along well and everything like that. Like you said, I think that actress is great. I just think that as a character, she is a little too close to River in terms of personality.
Uh-huh.
She reminds me a lot of like a younger River, and I feel almost that's kind of what they're doing with her, is potentially making a kind of younger type character like that. And I think
What if it is River reincarnated, because she is part time Lord?
Well, it's straight up even like she used up all her regenerations. Remember,
that's true. Yeah.
She's like in the preview of the new series. She straight up got that same denim jacket that River had in Let's Kill Hitler and stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe there is a connection to River there somehow. Maybe the regeneration thing. Maybe there's something going on there, but I don't know. And if there is, maybe that would be something to sate me. But and maybe that would certainly waylay my kind of issues with the fact that she's getting all up in the Doctor's business when the Doctor is a married man, you know. And if that's cool with everybody involved, there's no issue with that. But I gotta see what River thinks of this whole situation before we go any deeper into that. So,
well, I mean, River definitely continues to call the she calls the Doctor boy, and she calls him clever all the time. I mean, she always uses those words, and we did see Clara say, you know, "Run, you clever boy, run," you know. And
yeah,
so,
she does call him boy quite a bit. And the
River
fact that, yeah,
just
that,
yeah.
The straight up way, she kisses him, and then, you know, to be fair, he does it with kind of everybody, the Matt Smith Doctor, but, you know, his hands, not knowing what to do with his hands kind of, I made a couple jokes about how his hands are, they have a mind of their own, not just then, but especially when he's kissing somebody, he just doesn't know where to put them or what to do with them. And I think that's a funny thing, but it's also something that I associate with when he's around River a whole lot. And so maybe there is some kind of connection between Oswin and River that we don't even know yet. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. I'm pretty super excited, and we will see what happens.
I just hope it doesn't mean we're losing. If there is some kind of connection, I hope it doesn't mean we lose Alex Kingston, because I believe I'm on record as saying I very much enjoy Alex Kingston's presence on the show.
I thought she was confirmed to be in this season, the second half of the season, at some point. Maybe if just a cameo or something.
Sure, the second half of this season, but we don't know about next season.
Well, that's true. I mean, yeah, there could be some ways to do it, right? That's true. But we're only going to focus on this episode for today and leave our crazy theories for a future episode. final rating. What? Let's just say Sean gave it a 4 Evil Snowmen out of 5. What do you give it?
That sounds about right. 4 out of 5. Again, it's just another one of those instances of an episode of Doctor Who with great character work and just not mm-hmm. just doesn't have the overarching sort of bottle plot to support it. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the character stuff is way, way more important. And I think what we'll see is when this episode is like on DVD or when the season is on DVD and we watch it all as one big giant chunk, mm-hmm. We'll see that play out a lot better this season than we've seen in seasons past. But as a bottle episode, it loses a point for just not really delivering a decent villain or a decent sort of story resolution or anything. Yep. It's like, oh, okay, there's this sort of subversive alien consciousness and it's going to make some kind of thing that will take over the world. It's just like, oh, just like the nesting consciousness and just like the Sisters of the Water and just like everything else on Doctor Who. Okay, great. Like, and again, there's just no face. In this case, there's literally no face to the villain. I want a villain with a personality and a face. I want like that guy from Dinosaurs on Space, Saul, or what I think his name was. Somebody like him. Somebody who are like a master type character. Somebody with a face and a personality that can keep coming back to be a like recurring foil for the Doctor.
I totally agree with that. That docked it down a point for me as well. But I'm going to say 3 out of 5 because I'm so used to the Christmas episodes being kind of these singular episodes that you can watch at any time. And you can't do that with this one because there's this one is the kickoff to a second half of the season rather than
it falls in a weird position like that.
Yeah,
too.
And I think that's why
it's not the season error. It's the middle of the season. Yeah.
I think that's why I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 because I was expecting a Doctor Who episode just like last year's with the tree people. Was it the tree people last year or 2 years ago? Regardless.
No, tree people was last year.
Yeah.
God, maybe that's the best Doctor Who Christmas special because I was in tears by the end of that episode.
Exactly. And I think
that was a good one.
I think I'm comparing it to that Doctor Who as this, like again, as this kind of singular Christmas special as opposed to, tying into the rest of the season. So I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 only for that reason. I was expecting something singular. But I think that's it for now. I think next episode we're going to have Sean back, which we'll try to record next week at some point. Maybe even some other friends might be joining us on and off over the rest of the time. We'll talk about the kind of the teasers for this next season and then our crazy thoughts and theories for what's going to take place.
Where can we find you on Twitter, Dally?
Well, all right, great points. You can find me on Twitter at CoolRats, KEWLRATS. Steven, where can we find you?
You can find me at Steven Strom on Twitter, StevenStrom. I'm rapidly approaching 300 followers.
Nice.
My newfound popularity from another podcast I'm on, which I won't plug here just out of respect for Dalibor.
Side Quest, my friends. The Side Quest. You can find them on the Side Quest. You can also find us.
That's not the one. Nobody listens that one's, to that. I'm talking about the other one.
No, that one's too popular. There's no need to even mention that one. You can also find us at Lonely TARDIS. Please follow us at Lonely TARDIS. And, you know, do us a favor and rate us on iTunes. That would definitely help out. That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steven.
Thank you, Dally.
Great time frame. Great time here on the Lonely TARDIS. We had a good show. Great Christmas special. We'll see you guys next time on the Lonely TARDIS.
Yeah, we're bad at this. We should stop.
See you guys.